Good morning. It's time for us to talk business with our friend Dr. Paul Vollar, the John and Bruce Moody Chair in Law and Business at the University of Minnesota. And Paul, good morning. Nice to see you again.
Good morning to you, Dave.
I just want to mention this, and I hope you don't get angry with me. Paul has been formally awarded full professorship with tenure from the Carlson School. That is the highest degree of success a college instructor can achieve, and it is a big deal. And this is something you would never say a word about, you recent Fulbright scholarship winner, you.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry, but that deserves attention, Paul, and that's pretty amazing stuff.
Oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
No, congratulations to you. And I'm going to lose you for a little while here, unfortunately. I'm really disappointed about that.
Well, don't think of me leaving WCC. I'm just going to become your South African correspondent. If you need anything there in Johannesburg, I'm your guy.
You'll be down there doing some research and some teaching or some lecturing, I know.
That's right. I'll be there on their Fulbright scholarship. Kathy and I are going to go in July. We'll be there for 10 months. We'll have an opportunity to spend time at a couple of universities, one in Johannesburg, one out in one of the historically black universities in northern South Africa. And we'll be studying migrants, migrants who've come from throughout southern Africa to South Africa for work, and their remittances, the money they send home, which is billions of dollars annually. And it's really key to the development of the rest of that region. So it's a chance to see what's happening regionally, to study also a global phenomenon, maybe learn something what's happening here back in Minnesota.
And what people may not know, Paul, is you get asked and requested to lecture around the world. I've seen that many times. We've talked from all sorts of places on this globe. I know, whether it be over in the Orient or it be in Austria or somewhere like that. But this is also an opportunity for, I know, a lot of schools and places to contact you in that part of the world, because I know they already want you to come and speak to a number of places.
It is. You know, I think one of the exciting areas, really, the next generation of economic growth and development is in southern Africa, in particular South Africa. So it's a chance to be around and watch that university system come together. They've been underfunded over the past years, but they're really on the front lines of so many important economic and international business developments. I want to be there and find out what's going to happen next.
Well, congrats not only from me, but I know our whole morning show staff feels exactly the way I do.
Thanks, man.
Dr. Vollar, on to other things like Target's numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great news for retailers. It's great news because they're here in Minneapolis that has these important economic spinoffs for us. They exceeded expectations on revenue at about 4%, 4.8% on same-store sales. That's the big metric for them. And then earnings, about 9%. And the key to this was not necessarily what happened when you walked into the stores, but what happens when you click on the Target.com. 44% increase in sales. That's really driving things. It goes back to what Brian Cornell wanted to do when he came here about 4 or 5 years ago, which is be agnostic about the way Target customers interact with and buy their goods. Make it easy at all channels, and it looks like that's bearing fruit.
Nordstrom's not so good.
Right. There's a, in fact, there, Dave,
and
there's
a Dress Barn.
That's right. There we've seen, it's kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, a good with Target, not so great with Nordstrom's, kind of treading water, or even Kohl's, which has stalled in their sales. And then, of course, the demise of Dress Barn at 650 stores, going to shut down in the next 6 to 9 months, 6,800 employees that will be left. I mean, I think what we're seeing a lot of volatility in the retail business, Dave, at different levels. And I think there's an important background issue for it. It's not about the rise of the internet and Amazon. It's about the overbuilding of retail space in the U.S. Here's a little statistic. For every man, woman, and child in the U.S., there's 24 square feet of retail space. In the U.K., there's 5. Nobody comes close to what we have. And through tax policy and other types of ambitious growth in retail real estate, we've overbuilt. So there are a lot of stores that are sitting on a lot of property that probably shouldn't be there. And we're seeing the demise of some of them that are in secondary and tertiary mall markets.
You know, you mentioned the internet for Target, a lot of their success. And I thought about our conversation with Jennifer Smith from Innovative Office Solutions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Jennifer noted when she first started this was she went right to the web. And she was an innovator, and she was a bit of a pioneer. I mean, she addressed that quickly, and it paid off.
Isn't that something? It was an innovation which differentiated her right now. Now it's a necessity.
Yeah.
But I think any retailer at any level, whether it's business to consumer or business to business, you have to have different channels. You have to be agnostic about the way you sell things. Like Brian Cornell's got it right on this. And it is increasingly easy to do that. The big question for me is, do you want to build your own internet channels for that, or do you want to buy somebody else's existing? You know, that's what Amazon provides for everyone. Kohl's is doing that, in effect, to kind of up their game electronically, notwithstanding their stalled sales now. Others are building it on their own, like Target. So we'll kind of see whether you make or buy the new channels for selling in retail.
And some have bucked this trend?
Yeah, you know, there are a couple of big players, and they're at the lower end of things. Dollar General, Family Dollar, you know, building in kind of tertiary areas, in the rural areas, not in the malls, standalone plays. They've been growing at 350 stores over 2018, likely to continue with it. But like you say, the middle levels and the upper levels, even if they're making money, they're not building stores. I think Target built 35 stores last year. That's about it. So you see the growth is in that lower end. And it's in standalone stores. It's an interesting counter trend to what we see with retail more generally.
Let us challenge conventional wisdom right now with a consulting company that did a piece.
Yeah, you know, PricewaterhouseCoopers did this piece, and they challenged conventional wisdom. I love that, Dave. It's a story about CEOs and successor CEOs. The first story that's conventional is, if you find a CEO that's been around for 10 years or more, it's because the company's usually really profitable. Total shareholder returns go up. Okay, no surprise there. But here's the next thing. The successor to CEOs that serve more than 10%, there's about a one-third chance they're gone in 4 years.
Wow.
And so what it tells you is that even if you're an insider, it's really hard to follow a great act. And maybe it may be harder for Minnesota consumers to think about that in the company sense, but go to sports. Think of Les Steckel following Bud Grant. You know, that's really one of these, you know, long-term CEOs or leaders in this, and it's just a hard act to follow, even if you're internal. And I think, you know, they're not clear about what's driving that, but one of the things we do know is it's hard to adapt middle and lower level managers to the new guy, even when that guy walks in after having been there for a while. So there's something about that. It's a real challenge for CEOs when they're following a great act.
12 years at the U, right?
It is. It's 12 years for it. And I was just thinking about when I arrived here in 2007 and all the things that have changed. One of the things I remember was the iPhone was coming out at that time. And I remember hearing Steve Ballmer, then CEO of Microsoft, saying, you know what? This iPhone's going to just never going to make it because it doesn't have a keyboard for business. And it made me think about in the computer industry more generally. I went to school out in Boston, used to work out there. Ken Olson, the legendary pioneer of supercomputing at Digital Equipment, said in 1977, 30 years earlier, you'll never need a PC. And then if you want to go back 30 years earlier, Thomas Watson, the legendary leader of IBM, said, this was in the mid-40s, he said, I think we only have demand for 5 computers in the world. There are some industries where the technology outpaces the imagination of executives, and I guess we're kind of finding that out today.
Hey, congratulations again, Paul. Well deserved.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.